nothing but a bald spot. Neither of us had told Sonove that a small chunk of her lovely copper locks had been a casualty of the knife slicing over her scalp. Careful combing would camouflage it until it grew back, and Ren already seemed to have that part managed. My eyelids were heavy as I watched the bubbling fountain in the center of the garden. But then something disturbed my dreamy calm, a sharp movement in the corner of my eye. I turned and glimpsed a figure hurry up the steps of Dark Cottage and disappear inside. I sat up, not sure of what I had just seen. It happened so fast. He was tall and square-shouldered, but from here I could discern no features. It was more the way he hurried, then looked back out at the garden before he slipped inside that unsettled me. Maybe he was afraid the dogs would be loosed soon. Or maybe he was afraid of something else. "What is it?" Ren asked, my slight movement catching her attention. "Someone just went into Dark Cottage," I answered. "An employee?" "Maybe. But he was tall and square-shouldered." Those had been the Queen's exact words to describe the captain. Sonove jumped up from her chair and peeked out the window. "What color was his hair?" "White, I think, but it was hard to tell. Everything is cast with an orange light." "The captain's hair is black," she said. Ren joined us at the window, surveying the grounds with her sharp eye. "It's been 6 years. Hair can change." It felt like a trapped bird banged around in my chest as I hurried up the steps of Dark Cottage. The clouds above had grown thicker and more threatening. I didn't have much time before night fell and the dogs were loosed. I listened at the door before I eased it open a crack. I was met with silence, but as I stepped inside, I smelled something. A scent. The whiff of wine? Sweat? Maybe with the house closed up, it was just stale air. But it was something I hadn't smelled the last time I was here. A thin beam of light peeped through a draped window. It was all I had to navigate through near darkness. I stayed to the edges of the wooden floor to avoid creaks that might reveal my presence. I crept, room by room, through the kitchen, the drawing room, the pantry, the cellar, and the many chambers on the upper floors that I had searched the last time I was here. Again, they were empty, unchanged. I found no one. I checked the door at the back side of the house. When I opened it, the grounds were empty, still as only twilight is. Through hedges and trees, I saw a glimpse of the stables. Had he been on his way there? But why go through Dark Cottage? There were more direct paths. I closed the door. It was getting late. I needed to get back. But when I turned, a chill caressed me. "Go." A voice crawled up my spine. "Leave." A finger turned my jaw. "Hurry." And then there was a rushed blur of voices, hands, faces, running through the hall. "Shh, this way, run, don't say a word." Death strode among them, glanced at me, but this time he didn't smile. He wept. His arms were full, and he could carry no more. My chamber door was ajar when I returned to the main house. I cautiously opened it to find Jace looking in my wardrobe, pulling open drawers and ruffling through them. He wore only trousers, no shirt, no shoes, his hair still wet, as if he'd rushed in to search for something. I shut the door firmly behind me. He turned, startled.
"Sorry, I knocked, but you didn't answer. I was getting ready for dinner, and I realized I was out of shirts. And socks. I only had a few in the guest room, and those are dirty in my saddlebag now."
My shoulders relaxed. It was his wardrobe he was searching, not mine. I had almost forgotten I had commandeered his room. I moved your things to the bottom drawers, I said. Take your time. I'm enjoying the view. And I was. He held up his hand. His fingers were bandaged. A grin lit his face.
I'm injured. Maybe you can help me. I rolled my eyes.
Poor baby. As injured as a spider spinning a web, and you're luring me into yours.
But it's a very nice web.
I'll be the judge of that. I strolled over and he drew me into his arms, his kiss a bare whisper against my lips, as though he feared he might hurt me. My neck is fine, I said, only bruised, no lasting damage. But your knuckles. I pulled away and lifted his hand, examining his two bandaged fingers. Your mother was right? Broken? He shrugged sheepishly as if reluctant to admit it.
Maybe a little cracked, at least according to the healer.
You should always listen to your mother.
So she tells me.
I knelt to rummage through the bottom drawer for a shirt. White? Gray?
What about you, Cassie? He asked. Do you always listen to your mother?
I paused. Gripping the socks in my hands, kneading them between my fingers. It's different for us, Jace. I already told you, she's a general and has a lot of responsibilities. We don't see each other often.
But she must still worry about you. And today...
I heard him sigh. I heard the guilt.
This isn't your battle. First the labor hunters, and now this... Does your mother even know you're here?
Does she? Loss flooded my throat. It had gripped me today with a fresh, cruel hand reaching into my heart, tugging, reminding me of what I had lost. When I saw the concern in Verilyn's eyes as she looked at my neck, when she shooed me into the house like one of her children to have my injuries tended, I saw the lost moments with my own mother, all the memories I never got the chance to make. That was something else the Pervisi driver had stolen from me. 6 short years was all I had with her. My mother's absence hit me in a new, bitter way, because sometimes you can't begin to know everything you've lost until someone shows you what you might have had. I rummaged through another drawer. How about this cream one?
Cassie.
I stood and faced him. Stop. You don't have to feel guilty. My mother raised me from a very young age to be a soldier, and apparently I do it well. I'll take my reward now. I drew his mouth to mine and I kissed him, long and hard, working to create a memory I could hold on to. When I pulled away, I began buttoning up his shirt. His chest rose in a deep, quivering breath.
I guess there are some advantages to having bandaged fingers.
I think you can do your socks yourself. I have to get ready, too. I shoved him back in the armchair, then threw him 3 pairs to choose from. How'd your talk with Jelaine go? He was quiet, as if thinking it over.
It went well, he finally said. I'm all caught up on the arena business now.
That much to catch up on in just a few days?
The arena is a busy place. A lot can happen in a short time.
I asked if I could go along with him tomorrow, and he seemed pleased, but warned me he would have a full day and I might be left to my own devices at times. His being busy was convenient for me. It would give me time to look around unfettered, maybe just to find more of nothing. Is that what I hoped to find? Nothing?
I wasn't sure anymore.
For months, I had thought that finding the captain would close a door in my life. Many doors. It would not only erase present dangers, but erase past failures, too. It would make something right. It would bring justice to many where it couldn't be found for one. Jace noticed my silence.
What is it?
Secrets I still can't tell you, Jace. Oaths I can't break. Truths I want to share, but can't. What is this? I knew the answer now as certainly as I knew the exact shade of Jace's brown eyes. Turn around, I said. I need to change. His mouth pulled in a smirk.
You forget that I've already seen you half naked.
The intimacies of being chained together and my thin, wet chemise had left little to the imagination when we were in the wilderness. But only half. Turn. As he pulled on his socks, I threw on fresh clothes and began brushing my hair. I casually asked, "Will there be guests at dinner tonight?"
"No, just the family."
"What about the guests staying at Dark Cottage? When I was in Sinove's room, I saw someone go in there." He pulled on a boot and a puzzled expression filled his face, but he didn't miss a beat.
"No guests. It was probably just one of the groundsmen checking to make sure the windows were all shut. It looks like there's a storm moving in."
A storm. It made sense. I had seen the thickening clouds, and every window and shutter was pulled tight. "He had white hair," I added. Jace stood, thinking for a moment.
"Tall?"
I nodded.
"Yes, that's Erdsaf. Good man. He's been with us for years. Summer storms can be the worst."
I thought about the sudden violent storm that had hit when Jace and I crossed Bone Channel, and as I did, the room flashed with light and a crack of thunder shook the windows, as if on cue to confirm it was only a groundsman I had seen. Jace's fingers laced with mine. We walked through the halls, a rhythm to our steps that announced we were together, a rhythm that felt powerful, unstoppable, inevitable. We paused, kissed, lingered, like the world wasn't waiting for us, like the secrets between us didn't matter, like the entire house was ours and ours alone, every wall, every corner, every landing. We had escaped death today, and a second chance was ours.
"You're a good bit of trouble, Cassie,"
he said, pinning me against the foyer wall.
"The kind of trouble that I..."
Words burned in his eyes, words he wanted to say, but held back, a silent bargain between us. His thighs were hard against mine, and breath rippled through my chest like a fitful breeze. His thumb lightly traced my lower lip.
"We could skip dinner,"
he said, his voice husky. He had never pressured me, but I knew what was on his mind. It was on mine, too. "Dinner, pretty boy," I whispered against his jaw. "Your family is waiting." Everyone was already seated when we arrived in the dining room. Notably absent were Aunt Delise and her family.
"Nice of you to finally join us," Mason said. "Beware the gods, you missed prayers," Titus added.
Priya clucked her tongue. "At least the cold soup won't get cold." Their greetings were sarcastic, but a smile hid behind each one. They were happy to see their brother, maybe even me. "I'm sorry we're late," I said. "Time got away from us. We..."
"No need to apologize," Verlin said. "It's been an eventful day."
Bowls filled with cold mint soup were already placed in front of everyone. Verlin and Gunnar sat at one end of the long table, and the two seats at the head remained empty. Jace pulled one chair out for me, and then he took the other. Priya said quietly, noting my spot at the head of the table. Ren and Sinove sat near the middle, and I noticed that Mason was seated next to Sanove. I wondered how she had orchestrated that. Samuel sat across from Ren, his right hand heavily bandaged, and his arm elevated in a sling. Between his injury, Sanove's bandaged head, and the scrapes and cuts on Ren, Mason, and Jace, we were a sorry-looking lot, though decidedly less bloody than earlier today.
Did you see it? Did you see it?
Lydia and Nash bounced in their seats, echoing each other's excitement.
Open it! Read it!
Lydia said. Lying beside my bowl was the letter from the Queen. The seal had already been broken. I looked down at the other end of the table, and Gunner shrugged.
You weren't here. I wasn't sure if it was urgent.
I unfolded the letter and saw immediately that it was written in Moragese, not Venden. As I expected, the Queen intended for them to read it. I read it aloud, though I was certain most of those present had already viewed it. Dear Kazi, faithful Ratan in valued service to the crown. Ren choked on her water, and I sent her a warning look. The Queen was more of a casual note writer. She wasn't one for pomp and circumstance, and her formal greeting made it clear that none of her words were what they seemed. She had understood my letter to her to its core. I read your letter with delight and gratitude that the Ballinger family is extending its warm hospitality to you and to my other esteemed guards. Delight meant the whole Venden Council had a good laugh over it. Your revelations are indeed astonishing.
I don't believe a word.
This wild and untamed territory you've described is intriguing, and I trust you are using your time wisely to learn all you can about it.
I hope you've found our man by now.
Lord Falgriz.
I stifled a snort of my own.
Griz was no lord, and he hated the teasing title the Queen sometimes called him. Lord Falgriz, I continued, is escorting my brother to the palace at Marensia, where I intend to meet with him.
Griz was waiting at the rendezvous point, along with troops.
But I can put some of my longer-term plans on hold and make a short stop at Hell's Mouth.
Even a queen could not put some plans on hold.
I accept the Ballinger invitation to visit. I look forward to seeing you at month's end. If you have still not found your quarry by then, he is not there. Come home. Your faithful service is a gift to me and all the kingdoms. It will never be forgotten. She signed off with all four of her given names, which I knew she never used. The letter held no surprises except for the last line. It was a reminder. I believe in you. Pleased chatter erupted around the table, all of it polite because Ren, Sanove, and I were present, but I heard the crisp ring of entitlement. This was something they felt they had coming, and it was long overdue. But I noticed Jace said nothing. His eyes focused on Jelaine instead. She'd said nothing ever since we arrived, her back stiff against her chair, her eyes cast downward at her lap. While still looking at Jelaine, Jace asked,
Samuel, how is your hand?
The mirth of the room dulled. Samuel struggled to master his spoon with his left hand, the green soup spilling over the sides with his clumsy movements.
I'll live, he answered. Jelaine, look up from your lap, Jace said. Look around. You have nothing to add?
Jace, Priya said, warning in her tone. He shot her an icy stare to quiet her. Jelaine's attention rose from her lap. Her eyes were swollen and red. Her gaze circled the table as if seeing everyone for the first time until her eyes landed back on Jace.
Nothing to add, brother. Not a word.
Wondering glances ricocheted around the table. Surprisingly, it was the nasty one who tried to bring a measure of cheer back to the room.
I have more good news,
Gunner said. While you were away, another kingdom signed a lease for apartments. Kruvas will now make us a base for trading too. And that shipment we promised the Kandorans? I have confirmation it will be here in 2 weeks.
Now Gunner had Jace's full attention.
2 weeks? That's excellent news.
He leaned forward, eager to discuss it more, but then sat back.
We'll talk more later.
Verlin's eyes nervously swept the table. That's enough about business, she said. Let's enjoy our soup. Conversation erupted as everyone dug in. Nash asked Ren question after question, mostly about her Zeeths, which I had persuaded her to leave behind in her room tonight, though she still wore a dagger. I was surprised to see Mason talking quietly to Sinove, asking about her head, whispering something else I couldn't hear. Priya questioned Samuel about the settlement, but I noticed Jelaine remained quiet.
What's wrong with your sister?
I whispered to Jace. I'll explain later.
He answered, and his hand reached under the table and squeezed my thigh. His expression was taut, and he looked like he wanted to be anywhere but here right now. A loud clatter stopped the conversation, and everyone looked at Samuel. His spoon had tumbled from his fingers, and green soup splattered the table.
Sorry, he said. It may take me a while to get the hang of using my left hand.
He blotted the green spots with his napkin. Ren pushed her seat back and circled around to his side of the table, grabbing a mug from the sideboard as she walked. She placed the mug in front of him and poured the soup from the bowl into it.
There, she said. Drink. Problem solved.
She returned to her seat. Samuel smiled and lifted the mug to his lips, but Jelaine's eyes pinched with horror as she watched him. She pushed back her chair and fled the room.
What's wrong with Jelaine?
Lydia asked. Nash looked at Ren.
Can I drink my soup from a mug too?
Should one of us go after her?
Aram asked.
Jelaine will be fine, Jace said firmly. She's just tired. I'm giving her some time off from the arena.
Gunner leaned back and moaned.
Why would...
Gunner,
Jace said, stopping his brother mid-sentence with a sharp glance. I saw how quickly Jace could be two different people, the brother and the patre. That was the strain I had seen in his face earlier, the weight of it pressing on him. His focus turned, and I watched him eyeing Lydia and Nash, choosing his next words carefully. He stood and walked to the sideboard. He grabbed two mugs and set them in front of Nash and Lydia, then emptied their bowls of soup into them as he explained.
One of the crew we encountered today was a friend of Jelaine's.
Priya's mouth fell open. Titus sat forward in his seat. Verlin's lips pressed tight. Everyone but Nash and Lydia knew that the crew we encountered were dead at the bottom of a gully now.
Who was it?
Aram asked. Jace sighed.
Ferdig.
A hush fell at the same time Lydia shouted,
I know Ferdig! He's Jelaine's beau!
She and Nash began happily slurping their soup from the mugs. Jace walked around the table, returning to his seat.
There's more. Jelaine had mentioned Gunner's message to Ferdig, the one calling us home. That's how he knew where to find us.
Verlin leaned forward, her fingers pressing on her forehead.
Ferdig?
Priya said, as if she still couldn't quite believe it.
Why didn't you say something when we were out there? Samuel asked. I wanted to get information from Jelaine first.
Which one was he? I asked. Jace eyed my neck. My question answered. Ferdig was the one who had choked me. The one I had killed.
Chapter 39 Jace Today was every hell my father had ever described. I stumbled from one fire to the next. A raid, a betrayal. Cassie pinned beneath the body of a raider, soaked in a pool of blood. The memory punched me again and again. And I still had more business to address. There will be times you won't sleep, Jace. Times you won't eat. Times you'll have 100 decisions to make, and not enough time to make just one. Times a choice will make you feel like your flesh is being peeled from your bones. Times you'll be hated for the decisions you've made. Times you will hate yourself. You'll be torn 100 ways. You'll doubt your decisions and whom you trust, but above it all, you must always remember that you have a family, a history, and a town to protect. It is both your legacy and your duty. If the job of Patre were easy, I would have given it to someone else. Now I understood my father's anguish as he lay on his deathbed passing his duties on to me. It was as much a burden as it was an honor. I burst into Cave's End, and Beaufort jumped up from the divan to welcome me, a full goblet in one hand and a bottle in the other. "What the hell did you think you were doing?" I said. "Well, this wasn't the greeting I expected, especially not when we had an agreement that you'd stay out of sight. One of the Ratan soldiers staying with us spotted you going into Dark Cottage. I had to make up a story about you being a groundsman." Beaufort sneered. "Why are they still here? I feel like a caged animal. I thought I told you to get rid of them." I looked at him, looked through an arched doorway at the rest of them sprawled around the cage, as he called it, stocked with fine wines, tobaccos, ridiculous amounts of imported Gitos olives and Gastineau fish eggs, and he was giving the Patre orders now? I already saw myself throwing the whole lot of them out the gates of Tor's Watch in the middle of the night. Weapons be damned. He realized his mistake. "Patre, Patre, I'm forgetting myself. Forgive me. Come in. Can I pour you a drink?" He explained that with so many of us away and Tor's Watch so quiet, he had thought it was safe to go to Ray House and speak to Priya about more supplies. But then our caravan rolled into Grayson Tunnel, creating a flurry of activity. He waited until dusk when things quieted to return to Cave's End. "More supplies? We just filled a large order for you. There's a lot of waste with experimentation, I'm afraid, but now with the formula and craft perfected, we're ready to go into production." I couldn't deny I was happy to finally hear this news. Whoever was behind Furtig and his gang would crawl back to their hole and never bother Hell's Mouth again. "And the fever cure?" He shrugged. "Getting closer." The same answer. 3 children in Hell's Mouth had died last winter with fever. 3 children too many. Beaufort had shown me the scholars' stacks of notes and the strange flasks and dishes that they experimented with, but the calculations meant nothing to me. "Find it," I said, "before winter comes."
"Of course," Beaufort answered. "I'm sure we'll have it by then."
He set his goblet down and yelled toward the other room.
"Sarva, Cardos, Bar, all of you, get out here and help me show the Patre what his money has bought."
He put his arm over my shoulder, the rest of his sordid crew following after us, including the scholars, Torbak and Phineas.
"This way," he said. "Let's look at the final product."
We stood in the shelter of the skycap, the part of the cave that extended over the house and a good portion of the grounds, but the winds were fierce and we were still pelted with rain. At least the storm and thunder would disguise the sound. "Like this?" I said, holding the launcher to my shoulder the way Cardos had shown me. He, Bar, and Sarva were former soldiers. Sarva had once been a metalsmith, and he fashioned the launcher based on the scholar's designs.
"Keep it snug," Bar warned. "The mount will absorb a lot, but be prepared for kickback. Eye your target as if you were shooting an arrow. Now keep it steady while you pull the lever back."
A loud crack sounded, and a flash lit up the end of the launcher. punching it into my shoulder and sending me back a step. But the noise was nothing compared to the explosion when it hit the target 200 yards away. The surrounding mountains reverberated with the concussion. There were cheers all around.
"That going to take care of your problems?" Barr asked.
"Yes," I answered. "And then some." I couldn't wait to see the Kandoran ambassador's reaction to it. He wouldn't be yammering about development anymore, and no one would be touching arena caravans again.
"You can get 4 shots out of each load," Sarva said. "Though I doubt you'll have anything to shoot at after the first."
"You have all the specs written down?" I asked. "Carefully documented?"
"Of course we do," Beaufort answered.
"What about storage?" I asked. "Any dangers there? We're close to the family homes."
"None," Cardos said. "Though I wouldn't throw the loads into the kitchen oven."
They laughed like they were schooling a boy on the basics of safety.
"You don't need to worry about those details now," Sarva said. "We'll go over it all when we deliver your first shipment."
I smiled, like shipment was the only word he needed to utter to send me on my way.
"In 2 weeks?"
Beaufort nodded.
"That's right."
"Good," I said. I turned the weapon over in my hands, examining it again. "I'll take this one in the meantime." I slung the launcher strap over my shoulder.
"Hold on," Sarva ordered. "You can't take that."
He reached out for me to hand it over. I stared at him. I had almost been expecting his response, but was still surprised.
"Why not, Sarva? It's mine, remember? I paid for it. For almost a year, I've been paying for it. And you have all the specs written down to make more?"
He and Cardos exchanged glances, uncertain what to do. Beaufort stepped forward, smiling, a forced chuckle in his throat, trying to tamp down the tension.
"Yes, of course we do, but..."
"Then there's no problem here. I want to start training some of my men up in the lumber camps to work as caravan escorts. They always need the winter work." I reached over and swept the stacks of loads from the table into a canvas bag. "And I'll take these, too." Sarva's mouth hung open as I turned away. There was still plenty more he wanted to say. As I left, Zane strolled out of the main drawing room into the foyer, eating a chicken leg. He was as surprised to see me as I was to see him.
"What are you doing here?" I asked. "It's late for a delivery."
He hissed out a frustrated breath and shook his head.
"I know. I came up the back way to drop off goods."
He rolled his eyes.
"More wine and olives. The storm hit and now I'm stuck."
"We can put you up at Riverbend if you'd rather."
"That's all right. I've already got my stuff stowed. Hopefully the storm will pass by morning."
He eyed the launcher on my shoulder.
"You taking that with you?"
"That's right." He shrugged.
"Want me to deliver it somewhere for you? As long as I'm here, I can..."
He reached out to take it from me.
"No," I said, walking away. "I've got this one."
My hand rested on the door just as it had several nights ago, debating whether to knock. I was soaked through, and my hair dripped onto the floor. Cassie, I still wasn't sure how this happened. When we were alone, when the world wasn't looking over our shoulders, everything was easy. All I wanted was to be with her, hold her, listen to her voice, listen to her laugh.
"You don't even know half of my tricks yet."
I wanted to know them all. She might not commit to tomorrow's, but I knew she wanted them as much as I did. It was late. Probably too late. The door swung open as if she had sensed I was out there.
"Look at you, you're drenched," she said and grabbed my hand, pulling me inside. "You need a dry shirt and..."
"I only need you, Cassie. That's all I need."
Chapter 40. Cassie.
Our path glistened with water and small rivulets streamed across the trail as last night's storm drained down the mountain. Blinding blue sky winked back at me from puddles and swollen ruts, and bands of jays squawked as we passed. The backside of Tor's watch was green, the trees thick, and enormous colorful lichen taller than a man fanned out on the ancient ruins that lined our path like gaily clad spectators. Everything in this part of the world seemed to grow large. We were taking the back way that Jace had mentioned to get to the arena. Priya, Titus, Gunnar, and Straza rode with us. Jace seemed more like himself now, his eyes focused, already simmering with the work ahead of him. But last night, when he came to my room, he was a different Jace. He held me, soaking me in his grasp. I only need you, Kazi. After dinner, he said he'd had to take care of some business matters. Business out in the rain? I had asked doubtfully. The storm had been raging, the windows rattling with thunder so loud I thought they might break. He said the business was out in Grayson Tunnel, and he was caught in the downpour. I wanted to ask about Jelaine. I knew she had to be one of those matters, but I saw his weariness, so I said nothing. We had changed into dry clothes and lay on a thick rug in front of the fire. Tell me a story, Jace, I said, because this time I sensed that it was he who needed to be rescued from his own thoughts, just as he had rescued me so many times. His shoulders relaxed and his gaze softened, melting into a part of me that only wanted more. More of Jace. More of us. He told me about Moro Forest and the legend of a creature that lived there. His head rested in my lap, the fire crackling, my fingers raking through his hair until his lids grew heavy and they closed, his story unfinished, his face peaceful. My Chiatra, I whispered somewhere deep inside me where no one could hear, and then I nestled down beside him, and we had both slept. A loud squawk sounded, and we both ducked. We had turned on a switchback, and loud jays darted close over our heads. Easy, Mija, I said, and I rubbed his neck to soothe him. Jace looked at Mija's mane and frowned. It was braided again. I suspected Jelaine had escaped to the stables last night and shared secrets with Mija that she could share with no one else. When Jace rode ahead to speak with Gunnar about something, Priya fell back with me. How's your neck? She asked. I had worn a high-collared shirt and left my hair loose around my shoulders to help hide the bruises. Fine, I answered. She huffed out an amused breath. Not much flusters you, does it? I wondered if she knew I was the one who had killed Fertig. I wondered if Jelaine knew. Did you see your sister this morning? How is she doing? Priya shook her head. Still holed up in her room. She won't come out. I kept thinking about her red and swollen eyes, her silence. Did she love him? I asked. It doesn't matter now, Priya answered. The minute he plotted against the family, Fertig became dead to us. But Jelaine will get over it. She understands the cost of betrayal. She would have run him through herself if she had known. Fertig's aim was to kill her brothers, and maybe the rest of us too. It wouldn't be the first time a Patre and his family were all slaughtered. What? She grinned. I guess that's one story Jace didn't tell you. But I can assure you, Jelaine knows it quite well. Centuries ago, a Patre and his whole family were slaughtered at... But I thought the Ballinger line had never ended. All killed, except for the baby daughter. Priya told me that an uncle had succumbed to the flirtations of a lover. He let her in through a bolted entrance in the middle of the night. A flood of attackers followed behind her. As the family fled, they were cut down by rival powers, but a servant scooped up the baby, and they escaped down another path, making it to the vault. The servant eventually made it out through one of the caves and raised the daughter among cousins in the mountains. When the girl turned 20, she returned with those cousins in tow, and there was another slaughter in the very same house. but this time it was the daughter avenging her family's death, and a new reign of Ballingers began with her. Some swear they can still hear the dead walking through the rooms. That's why many guests aren't fond of staying there. There? Dark Cottage. It was the first Ballinger house. She shrugged. I've never heard anything in there. But I have. Are you afraid of spirits? She asked. Was I? I wondered. They whispered to you in unexpected moments and sometimes crossed the boundaries of life and death and touched you with cool fingers, and sometimes they warned you, but that was all. No, I answered. The dead can't harm you. It's the living, I fear. Priya cast me a long, sideways glance. I doubted you when you first came. I thought you were going to be a big load of trouble, but I admit I was wrong, even if you lied to me. I'm not sure I know what you mean. It was never a show. You always cared for my brother. I just don't know why you tried to hide it. Is it against your Venden laws for a soldier to fall in... No, I said quietly, cutting her off before she could utter the word I had avoided. Saying love aloud seemed dangerous. It made it tangible, easier to grasp and break. Or maybe I was just afraid the gods would take notice and steal it away. The Ballingers will never forget what you did for my brother. Yes, you will, I thought, if you ever find out why I really came here. But I have searched every room of your house and rifled through your private belongings. That I combed through your desk and touched your neatly ordered pebbles. That I was an invader instead of an ally. You will only remember me for that. The whole family would remember. We rode silently and my thoughts returned to Priya's story. A whole family slaughtered was a horror beyond imagination. No wonder the Ballingers were so protective, so diligent about teaching their history. But something Priya said niggled at me. A servant scooped up the baby and they escaped down another path. What path? There were no direct paths to the vault from Dark Cottage. She would have had to run out in the open, through the workyard, making her an easy target. Though the attack did come at night. As long as the baby didn't cry, she might have hid in the shadows and made her way there. If the baby didn't cry. I remembered everything I'd had to do to keep a tiger quiet when I smuggled it out of Sanctum City, and that escape was extremely well planned, not a panicked flight from intruders.
Just a mile to go,
Jace called. He circled back to ride with me again, his business with Gunner finished, and Priya rode ahead.
I'll give you a quick lay of the land when we get there, but while I go over leases and other business, you can explore the rest on your own.
Other business? Like Ferdig?
That too. Whomever Ferdig plotted with took a substantial hit with 12 men dead in a gully. There will be rumblings.
They were 12 well-trained men, Jace. There won't be rumblings. I saw how they operated, signaled each other, ticked off their moves as smooth as a timepiece. Ren, Sinove, and I have never been injured before. Those were no common bandits. They were cool as ice, even Ferdig. He was soulless when he choked me. And then when I stabbed him, he smiled. Jace was quiet, soberly taking in my assessment. Who's the one you least suspect? I asked.
That's your guilty party. I suspect them all, he answered.
He told me there were 5 league leaders, Rybart, Truco, and Paxton the most powerful among them, but the other leaders had raided caravans and stirred trouble before too.
12 dead crew will put a halt to any of their plans for a while. A dozen dead men would hurt our operations. It will cripple theirs. Still, I want to know who's behind it.
So they'll pay a greater price.
The unsaid words simmered in his eyes. We turned at the switchback and Jace pointed.
Look there.
I got my first glimpse of the arena through a clearing in the trees. It looked like a city in itself. The jagged oval structure rose 6 stories into the sky. 8 towers around its circumference looked like the fangs of some heavy-toothed beast rising up out of the earth. Its mouth was open and alive with activity. Behind the arena were more structures, warehouses, barns, silos, and fenced pasture land. Jace told me about the traders at the arena, some of whom sold actual goods, and others who displayed items to be sold and delivered on contract. On the center ground floor were local merchants selling food, small goods, and trinkets. On the perimeter were the larger traders.
Ro Lao sells exotic leather goods that aren't found anywhere else on the continent, and Azentil sells every flavor of honey you could imagine.
I didn't know there was even more than one kind.
And the Kiase lace from Civica draws an exorbitant price, but there's always plenty of buyers and not enough lace.
It seemed the whole world out there was far richer than the one I knew. And you get a cut of it all?
We're fair. We negotiate cuts, but if it weren't for the arena, they'd only sell a fraction of what they do now. They make a considerable profit, too. That's why they come.
No wonder the leagues ached for control of the arena, even to the point of trying to kill the Patre who controlled it. I'd seen people kill for less. The toothy towers I had seen from afar were actually long, circular ramps that led to the upper floors and to apartments on the highest level. The Ballinger apartments were surprising, far more elegant and luxurious than Tor's Watch. This was where they entertained ambassadors, wealthy merchants, and sometimes royalty who traded at the arena. This was where deals were made. The rooms were deep and dark, windowless on 3 sides except for the walls that faced out on the arena, so there were glittering ornate chandeliers to light the interior. Who else do you entertain here? I teased, peeking into one of the elaborate bedchambers.
I'd be happy to entertain you here,
Jace said, sneaking up behind me and sweeping my hair to the side. He nibbled on my nape as his arms circled around my waist.
Patre,
Gunner called impatiently from the foyer.
Jace growled. I have a meeting with Kandora.
I'll find you in an hour. I turned to face him. And how will you find me in this enormous maze?
You're not the only one with tricks up your sleeve.
He kissed me and left, but just before he reached the foyer, he turned.
You can get oranges on the floor, too. I hear if you mention that you know the Patre, you'll get a good price. Maybe even one for free.
Really? I said, pulling my brows down in disbelief. And I heard just the opposite. Mentioning the Patre could get me into a good deal of trouble. He smiled.
That too. Live dangerously. Take your chances.
He left me alone in the apartment, free to explore the entire arena, not the sign of someone who had anything to hide. Still, I did an obligatory sweep through the rooms, finding nothing suspicious. One worry rolled off me and another took its place. Move on. I pushed away the thought and left to finish my job, to search any hidden corners of this world. My fingers itched the minute I hit the floor of the arena. The noise, the bustle, the hawkers. It was like I was in the Jahendra again, staking out my next meal. I kept reminding myself I had a full stomach and coins in my pocket now, but playful banter with the hawkers could do no harm. In the outer ring on the ground floor, I saw some of the traders and goods that Jace had mentioned. The flowered carpets of Courtenay, the linens of Cruvis, the honeys of Azentil, and more. Everything that could be sold was sold here. Furniture, gems, metalwork, wheat, barley, spices, Animals for breeding stock, lumber, fine writing papers, minerals, intricate weights and measures, crystals, the finest products of a dozen kingdoms, all converging in an irresistible stew of sounds, smells, and flavors. I breathed in the delicious fingers of wood smoke that floated in the air, the hum of voices, the clatter of wares, and the distant, delicate warble of a flute wove together in a seductive welcome. Some merchandise ran loose. A bevy of keepers ran after a silky llama who escaped their lariats. He ran between stalls, always a step ahead of the keepers. I admired his technique. I kept my distance from most of the shops, perusing them from a distance, but then I paused to eye the trinkets in one of the center stalls of a local merchant, focusing on a ring that reminded me of home, a delicate silver vine winding around a circle of gold. My mother used to weave a crown of vines through my hair on holy days. The merchant immediately spied me looking at it, and out of habit I braced myself for a litany of jeers. Scat! Filthy vermin! Shoo! I ran through my mental bag of tricks. A riddle, a sleight of hand, to soothe his temper. But instead of a jeer, he began a pitch that I was all too familiar with. The pitch that was always reserved for others. On the outside, I appeared to be one of those others now. But on the inside, I would always be that girl who was ready to run. You have a discerning eye, he said, his hands moving with enthusiasm as he spoke. This ring is a rare find, a singular and scarce, splendiferous spangle. Pure gold and the finest of silver. I doubted that it was real silver and gold at all. You deserve such a treasure, a dazzling delectation for a delightful lady. He went on with an exaggerated flourish, his tongue twisting with glee over his descriptions. For you, today, I will cut the price in half. 10 grelos. I smiled and shook my head. Not today, but wait, he said, grabbing my hand. You must try it on. It was made for your exquisite hand. He was a short, stout man, his face cheerful and round-cheeked, with lines etched around his eyes. Your tongue is golden, sir, and your words alluring, but I cannot afford to spend coin on a luxury like this. He slipped the ring on my finger. There! It's yours. Surely you have something to offer me in return. His methods were certainly different from the merchants in the Jahendra. He seemed as eager to engage as he was to sell. I smiled, thinking for a moment. I can only offer you this as a testament to your mastery of persuasion. A riddle crafted just for you. His eyes lit up, and his long, wiry brows twitched with delight. He waited with anticipation. I added extra theatrics as a bonus just for him. I have no fingers, but can pick you apart. I'm not a healer, but can mend a heart. I amuse and hush, deceive and astound. And there's no sword forged that can cut me down. With rosy enticement and pouty appeal, I can twist and shape and pour forth zeal. I am made of snare and wit and gold, and you, kind sir, I said as I held the ring back out to him, add a touch of bold. With my last phrase, he clapped his hands with jubilation. Words? He cackled. Yes, words, he said, spouting the answer again. The joy of my trade. He curled my fingers back around the ring in my palm. A fair payment, bought and paid for. The more I refused, the more he insisted, and I finally thanked him for his generosity and moved on. I hadn't gotten far when someone fell into step beside me, someone as welcome as a flea on a scalp. I've never seen that old curd quite so enamored with anything besides his own wares. It was Paxton.
He's a logophile. Paxton clucked and wrinkled his nose.
That sounds nasty.
I was pleased that, courtesy of the royal scholar, I knew a word that the very polished Paxton didn't know. What do you want, Paxton? I asked, hoping to be rid of him as quickly as possible. He started to link his arm with mine.
Ah, careful there. Only if you wish to lose it, I said, eyeing his arm.
He glanced at the dagger at my side, then grinned.
We're practically cousins. I thought it would be a good idea for us to get to know each other. Be friends.
I think I know enough about you already. I got quite an eyeful the first time I saw you.
At the funeral? Emotions were high. It runs in the Ballinger blood.
Not Jace's. Paxton tweaked his head slightly forward, eyeing my bruised neck.
Yes, maybe especially his.
I pulled my hair forward to hide his view. He turned and looked up at the towers above us, shaking his head.
No doubt he's spotted me strolling with you by now, so it's time for me to take my leave. Just remember, I'm a Ballinger too, and not an unpleasant one most of the time. I hardly ever break wind at the table anymore.
When I didn't smile, he took my hand, at risk of losing his, and squeezed it gently.
If you're ever in need of assistance, I'm here for you. Tread carefully, cousin. Remember, everyone is not always what they seem to be, and crossing the wrong person can get you into more trouble than you bargained for.
Was he threatening me?
Sage advice I didn't ask for, I replied, but I'll keep that in mind. Paxton? A voice called. I thought it was you.
Paxton spun, his composure shaken for a moment, when a man in dusty, rumpled clothes clapped him on the shoulder. He quickly regrouped, and his worry sprang into a wide smile.
This is an unexpected pleasure.
The man was tall, lean, his cheekbones sharp, and his attention turned to me. His dark, wind-blown hair swayed perilously to the side like a cresting wave, as if he had just gotten off a horse and hadn't bothered to rake it back into place.
And who would this delightful creature be? He asked. Are you forgetting your manners, Paxton?
The man grinned and his fingers tapped together like an eager child.
Yes, of course, Paxton muttered, glancing up at the towers again. Your Majesty, this is Kazi of Brightmist, a visiting soldier sent by the Queen of Venda.
I stared at the man, from his lopsided mane of hair, to his smudged boots, to his foolish grin. Your Majesty?
King Monty of Icelandia, Paxton clarified.
The king clasped his hands in front of him, his brows and shoulders rising with expectation.
Do I get even a small bow?
A buffoon, just as Jace had described. A buffoon with an ego. Yes, of course, Your Majesty. I bowed low and deep, and when I rose, his dark eyes danced with amusement. And maybe something else. Expectation? Was he hoping for just a little groveling? Forgive me for my lapse, I said. I meant no disrespect. I just didn't expect to see you here. It's a great honor to meet you.
His grin wavered. Yes, I suppose it is.
I looked at his hands. They were uncalloused, and his nails were neat and manicured, not the hands of a working farmer. A silent moment passed, his gaze resting on me for an extra beat, just long enough for me to see unease behind his jolly banter. What brings you to the arena? I asked.
Llama, Surrey, to be precise, he answered. Such is the life of a farmer king, always trying to make ends meet. I hear the Kandorans have some fine breeding stock to offer, if I can afford it, that is.
He chuckled and raised his shoulders again like everything was a jest. And how are your investigations of treaty violations?